Ray Allen says he's still open to going to KG's number retirement, and we get back into the 70s discussion. The Celtics win another title on today's Wednesday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie, let's go! Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my Siege jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the Siege, that's the best way. Melly. John Corral is here from Mass Live saying thank you once again for making this podcast part of your daily routine. Very happy that you continue to integrate the Locked On Celtics podcast into your new life, whatever it is that you're doing, whether you're still going to work or working from home, whatever it is, very much appreciate that you're doing that. Today, back into the 1970s, we left off with the Celtics. Kind of the era is over, the dynasty is over, and now in today's show, back to the final, back to the playoffs, and we'll get to the first championship under coach Tommy Heinsohn in this show. We'll go all the way up until the 1975-76 season where they had that epic game six. Let me start with game five, I'm sorry. Let me start with Ray Allen speaking on the Cedric Maxwell podcast. I know podcast, talking about a podcast is very meta, but I just wanted to kind of touch on that before we got into the other stuff, because it's him speaking again, and this does kind of rile people up and it gets people going. And, Ray kind of went through a lot of the same things that he's been saying. I guess the biggest key thing that he said in this one is that he's still kind of open, apparently, to going to the Kevin Garnett number retirement. I don't know how good that'll look. I don't know how that would go. Assuming that next season, whenever that happens, is still full of fans and we have a full TD Garden for KG's number retirement. I don't know that between now and whenever that is, that Boston Celtics fans are willing to kind of forget. I think if Ray Allen goes and he shows up on the floor, that he'll get booed. And I put it out there. I wrote this up. I listened to that podcast and I wrote it up on masslive.com. So you can go to masslive.com/Celtics and read that. I left out a lot of my opinion on the matter, but I feel like if he goes to that ceremony and gets introduced as one of the members of the 2008 team, he would get booed. As of right now, what would have to happen? He would have to have a conversation with KG. KG would have to kind of agree, like, all right, it's squashed. And then KG would have to come out and probably do a series of interviews where he says, this is squashed, beef squashed, over. I'm getting these visions of the It's Always Sunny, the gang squashes their beefs episode. If you watched that, you know what I'm talking about. But it would have to kind of be a KG coming out and saying to everybody, like, look, it's done, it's over. And if KG can accept Ray and say, bygones are bygones, we're done with this madness, then maybe more fans can accept that scenario and say, all right, we're done with it, it's over, it's been 8 years, almost 9 years, whatever it is that it happened, and it's fine. The Celtics are fine. Let's be honest. Let's be honest here. The Celtics in 2012, that 12-13 team, they weren't going to beat the Miami Heat. They just weren't. Ray or no Ray. Ray being on that team, okay, yeah, he hit a shot that won Miami a championship. And who knows how it goes without Ray Allen, but okay. So he helped LeBron win a championship. That's going to piss a lot of people off. But I personally am of the opinion that he made a free agent decision. And you have to remember that at that point, he and Rondo just weren't getting along and the Celtics weren't moving on from Rondo. He and Rondo were just, it was, that relationship was done. Ray and Rondo were like super tight at the beginning. Rondo in his early years kind of mimicked Ray in his intense preparation for games. And then they fell apart. And then the Celtics were looking to move Ray. And he was traded. Doc told him he was traded, and then that fell apart. And so a lot of things happened from the player perspective that I felt like, I don't blame the guy for saying, you know what, I'm kind of done here. I'm not feeling it here anymore. So I don't blame him for leaving. So now the next step is, I know you're listening and saying, well, it's not that I blame him for leaving. It's that I blame him for going to join LeBron and the Miami Heat, the rivals at the time. It's very Kevin Durant going to Golden State. Okay, fine. And I'm not going to tell you to change. I'm not telling you this to change your mind. That's fine. Fans react to these things, how fans react to these things. And at that point, I was mostly a fan too. But I always come at things from a player perspective. And, you know, hey, you're a free agent. Miami comes along, says, hey, we're going to pay you this money. If that's the deal that he wants to take as a free agent, his family's cool with it. He's cool with it. You know, players who are free agents earn the right to go to whatever team they want to go to. So that's where I stand. It's the Celtics don't win in 2008 without Ray Allen. The Celtics do not get back to where they are without Ray Allen. I know, obviously, Kevin Garnett is the biggest reason why, and there's a reason his number is going to be retired, and there's a reason why Ray Allen's number is not, and I think that's the right decision as well. And it is what it is. Like, we're at the right point with Kevin Garnett was the guy that turned around the culture. Paul Pierce was kind of like the reclamation, not the reclamation project. He had that turnaround in his career, and he ascended to like a Boston legend. That was the right thing. Ray Allen made his contribution and then he left. That was a totally fine decision for me. I'm totally fine with the Celtics saying, you know what, you left. And that's a factor in us not retiring your number. And, you know, good for you. Congratulations on your second ring. That's all great. But, you know, it is what it is. Like, I think that's all appropriate. From there, if you want to boo, you boo. If you hate Ray Allen, you hate Ray Allen. I'm certainly not going to try to change your mind, but this is my opinion. So Ray said what he said. We'll see what happens. If he reaches out to KG, if somebody else reaches out to KG and they mend the fences, I think that would be great because it would be really fun to remember 2008 for what it was and not 2008 with the tinge of Ray Allen left a few years down the road. I think it'd just be fun. Celtics won a title. That was a huge win for the Celtics. It was a big turnaround for the franchise. And as we've said on this podcast before, when Chuck McKinney was on last week, it was the return of Celtics pride. It really kind of rekindled a lot of the stuff that the Celtics were known for. And it carries on today in the franchise. And Ray Allen was a big part of that. That's undeniable. Hate him or not, that's undeniable. So we'll see where it goes from here. In the meantime, the Celtics of the 1970s returned to Celtics pride as well. In our continuation, part two of the discussion of the 1970s, Tommy Heinsohn and his Boston Celtics go on a bit of a run, having amazing regular seasons, a 56-win season, a 68-win season. They have a 60-win season. In this next portion of the podcast, we talk about all of that, and we bring you into a title and one of the greatest NBA finals ever played. And then we'll stop right before the 1976 season, where they played maybe the greatest finals game ever played. So that's all coming up on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
1972 is actually...
Jerry West finally won a ring, by the way. I have to throw that in there because I've been ragging on Jerry West for being over in the finals. He finally won a championship.
In 1972, the Lakers finally break through.
They beat the Knicks.
That is when Kareem's the MVP that year. The Celtics make the playoffs again. Now, in the 1972 season, the Celtics whip off 56 wins. They are the third best team in the league. Now, the Lakers won 69 games, which at that point was a record. The Bucks with Kareem were 63-19. And then the Celtics led the Atlantic Division 56-26. However, they end up losing to those Knicks, and not just losing, they lose that series 4-1. So that was a bit of a disappointment for the Boston Celtics. I mean, it's great that they got back to the playoffs, but this does not end well. The losing in the conference finals, that's nice. But for a team that just won 11 of 13 titles not that long ago, losing when you should be the Eastern Conference representative is losing in five games in the conference finals, that's not great, Mike.
No, but, you know, in context and keeping perspective, it was a reasonable year for the Celtics. If they had gotten by the Knicks, that would have been some kind of an upset. The Knicks were a veteran team. They had improved a lot. They were only 2 years removed from winning their first title. They were a tough out, and they always played well against the Celtics that era. The Celtics were still young, but they were improving. And they had a leader in Havlicek. That year he made first team all NBA for, I don't know how many times, he had made it up till then, but he also made all defense first team. They had established an all defensive team. Now, over his career, he made all defense. Havlicek did, made all defense 8 times, and he was all NBA 11 times. But at that point, 1972, he was doing what he had to do to lead that team and get them back into where they needed to be. And 1972-73 was when they really came around.
So that 72-73 season, the Celtics end up going 68-14. This is the best regular season in Celtics history. The 86 Celtics challenged that. They won 67 games. But this Celtics team... 68-14. But again, they lose in the conference finals. Now, at this point, the Celtics have the best defense in the league. They have a top 10 offense. They are led by Havlicek. Cowens is averaging over 20. He's got 20-16. JoJo White is up close to 20 points a game. You got Paul Silas, who is giving the Celtics 13 points and 13 rebounds a game. Silas coming in is a big deal for the Boston Celtics. It's another move that the Celtics are that Red Auerbach pulls off.
Yeah, that was it's a good example of Red being one step ahead of the competition. Silas was not much of a scorer, but he was a solid defender and one of the top rebounders in the league. And he was a for his career, he averaged a double-double, 12 points, 12 rebounds. But for the Celtics at that time, that gave them somebody to match up with Dave DeBuscher on the Knicks. And that was a key acquisition for them. And the way they got Silas was that in 1970 draft, Red had used the 106th pick when they had 10 rounds. He used that to pick Charlie Scott from North Carolina, who was, I believe, an All-American. Now, why did he go 106th? Because he was already committed to signing a contract with one of the teams in the ABA. So if you were an NBA team, you weren't going to use a good draft pick on Charlie Scott. But actually, most teams didn't even bother to look at him. Red used this throwaway pick just so he would have the rights to Charlie Scott. Well, after a couple of years in the ABA, Scott wanted to come to the NBA, and Phoenix was going to sign him. Phoenix had Paul Silas. Well, Red said, you can't sign Charlie Scott because he's our draft pick. You have to compensate us. And in order to do that, you could give us Paul Silas. Phoenix agreed to that. So the Celtics had Silas to pair up with Cowens, and they together were dominant on the backboards, rebounding.
Yeah, I mean, that, you had both of them averaging, what I say, 13 and 13 for Silas, and Cowens was what, at 15?
Yeah, I don't know I don't have that right at my fingertips what Cowens did, but he was the MVP that year. Dave Cowens.
16. It was 16 rebounds. 20.5 points and 16 rebounds. So they together 29.2 rebounds per game. And Cowens was the MVP that year. And that was it. Back then, the players voted for MVP.
Mm. Cowens was second team All NBA. We talked about that
carrying
last
on
week
a tradition.
Where Bill Russell would finish second team All NBA but still win the MVP. Which was bizarre, but Cowens was a deserving choice for the MVP award that year. I mean, the Celtics had the best record in the league easily, and they just had some bad luck in the playoffs.
So, yeah, that year they get bounced again in the playoffs. You know, bad luck is bad luck, but this is a little tough to swallow because the Celtics lose again to the Knicks in seven games, and the Knicks go on to beat the Lakers for the NBA championship. So they lose to the eventual champion, but you know, at that point, you can see why you hated the Knicks more than the Lakers.
Well, part of that was because I lived in New York then, where I grew up, and so naturally. If you were a Celtics fan, you had a little bit of conflict with Knicks fans, and Knicks fans were everybody else who I knew, just about. And it was pretty intense. I used to go to Madison Square Garden when the Celtics would come in and sit in the cheap seats, and, you know, so you'd have some conversations with the Knicks fans while the games were going on. Nobody ever ended up in the hospital or anything, but it was quite an atmosphere to watch a game in.
Sure.
But anyway, the bad luck that the Celtics had when they played in the playoffs was that Havlicek got hurt. Havlicek hurt his shoulder running into a pick, and he had to. He was limited after that. You know, he had to miss game four against the Knicks. So the way the series played out was the Celtics won the first game and then lost the next three. The fourth game being in New York, Celtics really needed that and they, in order to tie up the series, and they were without Havlicek.
So we can thank Dave DeBuscher for that.
Yeah. But they were up 16 points with 9 minutes left. And then there was some what you would call highly suspect officiating by Jack Madden and Jake O'Donnell, who those names became
Jake O'Donnell.
Well known in Boston because
man,
those guys are screwing us over again.
Jake O'Donnell. I must have heard Johnny Most mention Jake O'Donnell a million times.
Yeah, that was John. He wasn't a favorite of Johnny by any means. Johnny would give it to him. But, you know, people might say, okay, you're Mike, you're a biased fan. Of course you're going to say that Celtics got hosed, but that was so egregious, the officiating over that last quarter. I don't have, like, they don't have detailed box scores from back then where you can say, well, they shot X number of free throws in the fourth quarter. But there was something like 7 straight calls that went against the Celtics. And after the game, Cowens, Chaney, and White all fouled out of that game. And it went double overtime. And after the game, everybody was talking about the officiating. Even Bob Ryan of the Globe, who would not go out of his way to blame the refs. He was more practical than that. Even he was outraged. I do remember he wrote a column about it where he was ready to throw in the towel and just be done with the NBA. He said basically that, you know, you had to wonder what was really at work here with the way that these calls were being made. So the Celtics lost. They were down 3-1. Havlicek came back to the series and tried to play, but he was basically playing with one arm. Even though he couldn't really do much with his right hand, he did play okay, and the Celtics won Game 5 at home. They won Game 6 in New York. That was the time when the Knicks could have put the kill shot, and they weren't able to do it. But then when they came back for the 7th game in Boston, the Knicks finally took advantage of Havlicek being one-armed, and he only made 1 out of 6 shots that day, scored 4 points. The Celtics couldn't make a shot. They lost 94-78. So it was a rough day. And again, they fell short. Not that year, they really should have won. I mean, Tommy was coach of the year. They opened the season with a 10-game winning streak. They finished the season with 24-2 run, won 24 out of their last 26. They really should have, if all things were equal, they really should have come out of that season with another banner.
Well, unfortunately, they did not. But they did the following year. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Tommy Heinsohn wins his first NBA title in 1973-74. The Boston Celtics go 56-26. They actually get over the hump. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks in 7 games. And this 1974 finals is actually considered one of the best NBA finals of all time.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. That series was as intense and crazy as anyone that I've ever seen.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. They went 7 games. There was 2 games that went to overtime. One of them was a double overtime.
Yep.
Five of the games were won by the visiting team. Nobody won two games in a row. It was back and forth for 2 weeks. And the Celtics in game six, that was in Boston because, the Bucks had home court advantage. Game six, the Celtics, it was double overtime and the Celtics were up one with 8 seconds left. 8 seconds away from the title. And one stop is all they needed, but the Bucks had the guy that would end up being the all-time leading scorer in the NBA, Kareem. He hit this ridiculous hook shot. You know, his hook shot was unstoppable and the purest shot you could have. And he hit this from the baseline. It was at least 15, 16 feet out, not like an easy one from the middle of the paint. He hit a running, rolling hook shot with a couple of seconds left on a do or die where they had to have it or the season was over. And I mean, it was just such an incredible shot. But, in the end, it worked out because the Celtics won game seven on the road. They really dominated that game seven. They were not threatened. They held the Bucks off the entire game. Part of it was that the Bucks players were a little tired that Friday night. That game six was on a Friday night. Kareem and Oscar played all 58 minutes. Kareem was young. Oscar was not. He probably overdid it. Havlicek played all 58 minutes, but as we talked about, he could do that and still retain his energy. So, because the game on game seven was on a Sunday afternoon, so it was only like a day and a half later. And the Celtics changed up their strategy on Kareem. Tommy decided to have them double team him. And so Collins and Silas fronted and played behind, you know, one each, double team Kareem, and for 18 minutes, he didn't score. And the Bucks never recovered from that.
That change is really what won the series for them. The Bucks went into that a little shorthanded because their point guard, Lucius Allen, was going to miss the entire series. So that put Oscar Robertson, who was 35 at that point, into the front line. And like you said, have forced to play that much, that just didn't end up going very well for them. John Havlicek, meanwhile, wins finals MVP. He averaged 26.5 points, almost 8 rebounds, almost 5 assists in that finals. Cowens in that game 7 puts up 28 and 14, and all of the defensive kind of adjustments that the Celtics made allowed not only the Celtics to slow down Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but with an extra person or two on Kareem, Cowens gets a little bit more help and a little more energy to go off on the defensive end. He shot 8 of 13 in the first half. Just a big number for Cowens, and that adjustment from Heinsohn really paid off on both ends.
Yeah. And that series, that game six that went double overtime, I bet that almost everybody has seen the play that was like the signature play of that game until Kareem hit his shot. And it's the one where Dave Cowens was switched off onto the big O. Mm-hmm. And Robertson was dribbling and Cowens poked the ball away and then went running after it and stumbling and falling. And he dove and skidded.
Yep.
Trying to grab the ball and the shot clock ran out and it was a violation. Celtics got possession. That play was Dave Cowens in a nutshell because he was like a maniac out there on defense sometimes. As intense and competitive as anybody who's ever been in the league.
That's like the signature play. That's on every Cowan's highlight. Just
right.
the dive, the slide. Cowan's is a maniac here. But Cowan's, we'll get to Cowan's in a little bit. As far as he's great, he's intense, but at the same time he has like these ups and downs, and his downs, like he ends up needing breaks and taking a hiatus. And it really, it's Cowan's career in Boston is really interesting. But that's coming up. In the meantime, we have to get to the 1974-75 season, where the Celtics again win 60 games. But the Washington Bullets also win 60 games, and they meet in the conference finals, and the Celtics lose to the Bullets in six games in the conference finals.
Yeah, that was a rough one. The Celtics, they had five players that year who played all 82 games. And Cowan's was not one of them. He missed the first 17 games with a broken foot. But they did have an outstanding season, 60 wins, as you mentioned. Into the playoffs, they played the Rockets, Houston, in the first round. Again, the alignment was different back then. They beat them easily, 4-1. Then they played the Bullets, and I distinctly remember that the first half, the Celtics were up 12 at halftime. No problem. They were doing whatever they wanted to do. That was the end of it. After that, the Bullets controlled the whole series, even though the Celtics did end up extending it to six. They fell behind in the series 2-0 and then 3-1, and they just could never recover. The Bullets were led by Elvin Hayes and Wes Unseld, who were two big men, both in the Hall of Fame. Elvin Hayes was a prolific scorer. But actually, the guy that I remember hurting the Celtics the most was named Nick Weatherspoon. He is not a remarkable player by any means, not an all-leaguer, but he just, they couldn't stop him in that series. And he ended up being the main reason, I think, that the Celtics lost.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 13-5 over the course of that series, which, you know, when you're dealing with guys like Elvin Hayes and trying to keep Wes Unseld off the boards, you're allowing a guy like that to come in and do what he did hurts. So the Celtics in, so this is 1974-75. It's a brief departure. The Celtics, again, 60 wins in this season. The next season, they go off and win a title. So up next, the Boston Celtics go back to the finals, the 1975-76 season, and they win their second title of the 70s. We're going to pick it up in the next podcast with the Celtics heading into a triple overtime game, which is just wild, crazy officiating. An official gets attacked by a fan on the floor. It's just insanity in the 1976 NBA Finals. A former Celtic figures heavily into that, and that's all coming up on tomorrow's podcast. So please subscribe if you haven't subscribed. Please do that and share the podcast. Tell all of your friends that they should be listening to this special edition, all of these historical deep dives They should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.